Hi, I'm Kyoko. I'm from Japan. Listening to the world is one of my morning routines. The world helps broaden my horizons. I really love listening to the world. Thank you.
If you are like Kyoko and the world is part of your daily routine, we hope you'll join her in donating today. Listener support is crucial for our show. It allows us to bring you the best in international reporting with our mix of rigor and empathy. You can visit theworld.org/give to donate. That's theworld.org/give. Every bit helps and will get us closer to our goal of raising $25,000 by June 14th. Thank you so much. Hey there, I've got a quick favor to ask you. We are doing a listener survey to learn more about how you listen, what you like about our show, and maybe what we could improve on. It takes about 2 minutes to fill out, and we would be grateful if you did. You can find that survey at survey.prx.org/world. Again, that's survey.prx.org/world. Thank you.
I'm Marco Werman. On this Memorial Day, a trip down memory lane with some of our favorite artists and music stories, like the time a young Ed Sheeran schooled me in rhythm.
I'm not the best beatboxer and I'm not the worst beatboxer, but I could definitely teach you.
Twin sisters from Cuba who draw on diverse vocal influences from Bulgaria to Nigeria.
We have an obsession with voices.
Yes.
And when you listen to Yoruba music, it's all about rhythm and voices.
Also, the joy of discovery. That's what happened when this ethnomusicologist went on a quest in Pakistan to find a master musician.
He was sitting there on the other side of the road because his motorcycle chain had broken. And the guy from the tea stall said, "Oh, Ustad Noorbakhsh, there he is."
Join us for this hour of music stories from our archives right here, today on The World. This is The World. I'm Marco Werman. It is great to have you along with us on this Memorial Day as we prepare to do a big dig into our music archive. Music has always been an important part of the show. When I helped get The World off the ground in 1995, we called our daily dose of music journalism the global hit. We had musicians from all over the globe. In 2013, for example, I had this conversation with Senegalese artist Baba Mall about touring in Africa as a UN Goodwill ambassador and what impressed him, not in the cities, but the countryside.
One of the villages I went to visit, I see the group of women down there who know exactly how to be together, how to focus on what they want to achieve. And the only thing missing is the support.
Over the past nearly 30 years, we've established a deep archive, music and stories about music and the things that are on musicians' minds around the globe. Joining me on this journey for the next hour is the world's producer and show director, April Peavy. Welcome, April.
Hi, Marco. Good to be with you.
April, you are a crucial part of our music coverage. You've been with the show for nearly 20 years, and we've worked together on countless music stories. We're going to share some of our faves a little later in the show today, but I first want to focus on you and your role as show director and how you really use music to establish the sound of the show. How do you think about that part of the job?
Well, it's interesting because sound is so important to the show, and it's something that listeners may not realize. When it's right, it's seamless. And when it's wrong, it can be really cringeworthy. And the music that I'm really referring to here is the music that's heard between the stories or maybe the end of segments that takes us to the break. It's really about pacing and tone. Is it sad, happy, neutral? And that's where the music can punctuate. So when picking the music, it's about being aware of those moments and realizing that the mood can also change numerous times throughout the show. And that's the challenge, and that is what keeps me on my toes.
So there's the overall sound of the show, and then there are all the wonderful artists we've featured on the program over the years. One thing we've done a lot is highlight up-and-coming global recording artists. Back in 2012, we featured a young redheaded singer on his first U.S. tour. Ed Sheeran came to our studio in Boston, and we started a conversation by introducing his debut single, A-Team.
White lips, pale face, breathing in snowflakes, burnt lungs, sour taste. Lights gone, days end, struggling to pay rent, long nights, strange men. And they say she's in the class 18,
stuck in her daydream.
A-Team, it's a slow, melodic song, but it's not a love song. What is A-Team about?
In England, drugs are put into different classes. So class A is heroin, crack cocaine and cocaine. It's a kind of a little phrase that I made up to say she's in the class A team. It means she's on a class A drug. But if I was to write that, no one would have given me a look in. I wouldn't have got radio play or TV or anything. So it was just a way of me being a bit more clever with it.
I understand that you were inspired to write this song by encountering a homeless woman.
I did a gig at a shelter, and it was a kind of, it was called Crisis at Christmas, and every Christmas they get warehouses all around the country and house the homeless for a week over Christmas, and they give them shoes, healthcare, food, beds, cinemas, and I was the entertainment for one of the days, and I spent the day kind of chatting to people and getting to know people's stories, and it just so happened that I was inspired by one person that I met, so I wrote that song.
Loose change, bank notes, weary eye, dry throat, cool girl, no phone. They say she's in the class 18, stuck in her daydream. Been this way since 18, but lately her face seems slowly sinking, wasting.
Does it bother you that people don't understand that this is about a serious subject, about a person you met, a very serious narrative?
No, because I don't want to force it on anyone. I've made a video for it that's very, very clear, and the song itself, if you look into it, is clear. So I think I've kind of done everything I can do.
Do you find a lot of success through your videos? I mean, is your world a video and a CD world? Or download world too?
I guess so, but my video world, like, I didn't appear in the first three music videos that I did, and they were my three biggest hits. Yeah, I mean, my world is more kind of with videos, kind of revolving around doing really interesting ideas that really engage the listener and watcher, rather than kind of just doing a weird video where it's all about me.
I have to pick up on that. You said you didn't appear in three videos. One of them is a tune, Lego House, I imagine,
yeah,
which features your doppelganger, Rupert Grint, who plays Ron Weasley in the Harry Potter
yeah.
series. You guys, I mean, it's pretty striking.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, from the Harry Potter films came out when I was 11, so from the age of 11, I was Ron Weasley in school. So,
oh my God, they came out when you were 11?
Yeah, man.
You're so young.
Yeah, but the whole thing with that is, like, I didn't want to appear in the music video. I kind of wanted to get someone that looked like me, and I was kind of looking around seeing if there's anyone, and then I was like, oh, well, what about just asking Rupert Grint? I was at a stage as well where, you know, the music had taken off a little bit. I just had, you know, the number one album in the UK, and I thought this is probably the best time to ask him.
So he did. He was up for it.
Yeah, he did it for free as well, which is
wow,
which is pretty
sweet.
Cool. Yeah, he's a really nice guy.
All right, let's hear the tune.
I'm gonna pick up the pieces and build a Lego house. If things go wrong, we can knock it down. My three words have two meanings, but there's one thing on my mind. It's all for you. And it's dark in the cold December, but I got you to keep me warm. If you're broken, I will mend you, and I keep you sheltered from the storm that's raging on. Now I'm out of touch, I'm out of love. I'll pick you up when you're getting down. And out of all these things I've done, I think I love you better now.
That's the tune Lego House, which if you look at theworld.org, you can see it's not Ed Sheeran, but Rupert Grint from the Harry Potter series. You guys really do look a lot alike.
Do you know what's mad as well? Like a large percent of England for some time, because I hadn't appeared in any music videos and not really been on TV at all, thought that Rupert Grint had finished Harry Potter and started up a music career. So that was nice.
So aside from the deceptively gentle lyrics that can throw a curveball at the listener, Ed, you've got other surprises. You also do some beatboxing as well. Can I impose on you and get a little beatbox lesson? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not the best beatboxer and I'm not the worst beatboxer, but I could definitely teach you. So to make a bass drum sound, you say the word puh, but you take the sound out of it. So it's just puh. Yeah, that kind of thing. And then to make a hi-hat sound, you take the word tuh and take the sound out of it, so it's just t, t, And then to make a snare sound, you take the word ka, you take the sound out of it, so it's k. So then to make a beat, you'd go pa to ka. So you go. There you go. And
I sound like I'm just spitting.
Yeah, I know, but you have to obviously like loosen up your mouth a little bit. It takes a little bit of practice. It's that kind of thing, but I'm not a beatboxer at all, but I'm happy that you wanted to learn.
That's Ed Sheeran in our studios back in 2012 when he first started playing shows in the U.S. I had forgotten about that beatboxing lesson from Ed Sheeran. That is something to share with the grandkids. It's fun introducing artists who are just at the start of their careers. That's something you, April Peavy, you've done a lot of. You recently had another up-and-comer on your early warning system. She's from the Canary Islands in Spain.
Yeah, that's right. That's Valeria Castro. She's from the island of La Palma. I met her backstage at a show in October last year in Spain. Her first album had just come out, and it was influenced by a volcano that had erupted on La Palma back in September 2021. And that was the part of the story that I really wanted to hear more about when I spoke to her. The volcano on La Palma erupted 2.5 years ago on September 19th. Hot red lava moved its way to the coastal villages below. La Palma was in a state of emergency. The destruction affected thousands, including the family of Valeria Castro.
Everything touched me so much, you know, because all the memories from my grandma was there.
Her grandmother's house was destroyed, as well as many other places Castro remembered as a kid growing up in La Palma. To help her process the loss, Castro turned to music. The first song she wrote was this one, La Raíz, or The Root in English. Todo se inunda y piensas que nunca toca la bala en tu pecho y asusta y todo parece que en unos meses sigues pensando que igual es tu culpa y tú mirando a todos lados.
That song is so special because it helped me to move on in this awful thing that happened to so many people in my island and also my family.
The song appears on Castro's debut album, Con Cariño y Con Cuidado. It's an album that emerged from the ashes and connected Castro to her roots.
My family always tried to teach me, you know, to live with tender and with care for everything in my life.
Music was everything to Castro as a child. She started playing piano at age 4. By the time she was 17, she posted videos doing cover songs on social media, and you can probably guess what happened next. One of her favorite artists shared her posting, Spanish musician and singer Alejandro Sanz.
For a kid from La Palma, being listened by Alejandro Sanz is something so big, you know, so it was so special, and I remember it, and I always remember it with so much love.
Signing to a major record label came next. She re-recorded some of those cover songs, including Desde Cuando by Alejandro Sanz. Castro was cautious about that first quick flurry of fame. She needed a backup, just in case her music career fizzled. Her backup plan meant leaving La Palma and heading for Madrid for a degree in biotechnology.
It was the plan B, you know, but I never stopped music. My mom wanted me to make a university career just in case.
Just in case. But now at 24, her plan A, a music career, seems to have worked out just fine. Castro's received a Latin Grammy nomination, performed at sold-out shows throughout Spain, and has collaborated with some of her favorite artists. Valeria Castro is fully prepared for whatever happens next.
The world World's April Peavy there reporting on Spanish singer Valeria Castro from the island of La Palma. April's with me on this musical Memorial Day special, and I love that story, April, because it reminds us of all the different prompts that get artists to sit down and write a song. What inspires them to make music? In this case, a volcano.
Yeah, it's great when we have a chance to meet people like Valeria Castro. It gives us a chance to really dig deeper and hear where their art comes from.
April, you'll be back with us a little later in the show as we continue to dip into some of our favorite music stories and interviews from our archives. You're listening to The World. This is The World. I'm Marco Werman. We are combing through our music library on this Memorial Day, listening back to stories and interviews that get us tapping our toes, bobbing our heads, and thinking. Here's a conversation about an event that took place and the music around it almost 50 years ago in Kinshasa, Zaire, now the Democratic Republic of the Congo. It is the fall of 1974.
Muhammad Ali takes on George Foreman in a bid to regain his heavyweight crown in the fight billed as the Rumble in the Jungle.
The fight was certainly treated as epic at the time, but in the years since, it's come to be seen as downright historic. Muhammad Ali's robe is at the Smithsonian in Washington. There have been books and two films, including the 1996 Academy Award-winning documentary, When We Were Kings. Back in 74, the Rumble in the Jungle was scheduled for a September date, but had to be postponed by a month. A three-day music festival that was supposed to coincide with the fight couldn't be rescheduled, so it went ahead as planned, and that festival has taken on a life of its own, becoming the focus of a great documentary a few years ago called Soul Power.
This man will freeze your knees, if you will. Let's all welcome the world's godfather of soul, Soul Brother Number 1, James Brown!
Soul Power focused on the American soul and Latin artists who played the gig in Kinshasa.
We had this incredible array of who's who in black American music at the time.
That's American music producer Stuart Levine. He organized the American acts for the music festival. Along with James Brown, there was also B.B. King, The Spinners, Bill Withers, The Fania All-Stars. Soul Power is a wonderful trip back in musical time, but noticeably absent from the doc, the African artists, Taboulé Rochereau, Franco and the Tipoc Jazz Ensemble, Miriam Makeba, musicians super well known on the continent, less so here, until this year. A few months ago, a double CD came out that highlights these artists. It's called Zaire 74.
Kinshasa oyo, etona na makambwe. Mobali oyo na tiaki motema poto vanda Ame misienga mokumba pe alimwe yeo Mama Kalia na muna kalio Kalia na muna kalio
So, Stuart, how much of this project, this release of this two CD set, Zaire 74, The African Artist, how much of it is kind of an intentional righting a wrong and reminding people that there were also some great African artists who performed?
Well, you hit it right on the head, Marco. It was us waking up to what we had not really fulfilled, which was to at least have this music heard. And it is very much an example of what was missed during those years. You know, just unawareness by all audiences toward this music. So I think it's well put to say it's the righting of a wrong. It's us righting our wrong, and also the audience being able to hear just how staggeringly great these performers were, particularly on that night.
That's one of Miriam Makeba's performances. Hugh Masekela was Stuart Levine's counterpart in Africa, curating the African acts for the festival. Now keep in mind, these recordings for Zaire 74 were made live, with no chance to have any second takes. Masekela hadn't even heard these tapes since the 70s.
Listening to Zaire 74, we were blown away because we didn't know 40 years later how dynamic the music was and how different it was from the regular music that people expected, especially from Congolese artists, so that they were familiar with, you know, because these people really prepared for the festival, and like the excellence of their performances, I think, like testifies to that.
Who was the African artist that you didn't know that well who really blew you away with their talent at the time?
I had lived in Africa. There was nobody I didn't know, really.
You had already had a couple of hits in 1974 here in the States. Why didn't you play at the concert? You seem like you would have been the perfect kind of artist.
Well, putting together a festival like that was a seven-month job that, like, Stuart Levine and myself and our team had to put together. And, like, to put together a festival that far away from the States was a double job.
So there was When We Were Kings, not to mention Soul Power. A third film focusing on the African musicians could be well received, but will it get made?
I don't think so. Our feeling about this is there have been two films about this subject.
Producer Stuart Levine again.
There isn't enough suitable footage to, or real interest, to be honest with you, to do a third one. The idea is, I don't know, if you close your eyes and listen to this music, I think you end up there, you know. If you close your eyes, you're in Zaire, because the energy, the enthusiasm of the audience and the performers, and more than the audience even, this was the biggest moment in their lives. Here they were in their hometown on a stage in front of 60,000 people, when maybe the largest audience any of them ever played for was 1,000 people. That fabulous sound system, and they were able to tear it up. And they also were, after showing the American artists that they could take care of business, you know, there was a certain kind of competitive spirit, I think, that had something to do with the fight. But also, you know, as quiet as this kept, great musicians love to cut one another, you know. Franco went on and he tore it up, and afterward B.B. King said to me, "I ain't following that, man." Really, I ain't going up there, you know. The African audiences, the Congolese audiences, they were, as much as they were dancing to James Brown, they were grooving to Franco and OK Jazz, you know. It was fantastic for them. So they played at the height of their powers.
Franco and Teapot Jazz live on stage in Kinshasa in 1974. They were, as Levine said, at the height of their powers. So I get what B.B. King was feeling. They were a very tough act to follow. You're hearing music from the late Franco Luambo and the Teapot Jazz Orchestra from this incredible CD release, Zaire 74, a collection of the recordings of the African artists who played the music festival for the big fight between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman, the famous Rumble in the Jungle. Ali won that bout, incidentally, knocking out Foreman in the eighth round. We'll have more music from our archives coming up in the second half of the show. You're listening to The World. Coming up on The World's Memorial Day Music Retrospective, Regina Spektor.
I spent the first 9 years of my life being a little Russian girl, you know, and then at 9 and a half, my life as a little American girl began.
It's those first 9 years, Regina Spektor tells us, that molded her, even after arriving in New York and breaking through to the indie rock scene. That conversation and a lot more just ahead here on The World. This is The World. I'm Marco Werman. I'm joined on this Memorial Day by the world's April Peavy, my longtime co-conspirator on the music coverage for the show, and our main studio director. So, April, you and I have worked together for a long time, scouring the planet for interesting music, musicians, and their stories, hearing new artists who have something to say, and, well, sharing that with you, the audience. We've done hundreds of profiles of artists, speaking with them one-on-one, and sometimes they will come into the studio to talk with us and play for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure you remember the time that Ernest Wrangling stopped by our studios here in Boston. He's the Jamaican ska pioneer. He came in 10 years ago. He was 81 at the time, I believe. He brought in a couple of band members, and they treated us to this really rare acoustic performance.
One, two.
Jamaican guitarist Ernest Wrangling there playing his song Follow On a few years back for us. One very memorable performance. I'll never forget speaking with the late great flamenco guitarist Paco de Lucia backstage at the Paramount Theater here in Boston.
All through the interview, you've been moving your fingers, lightning speed. Just what does that do for you before a concert?
Get warm, like a football player. You know, the finger has to be warm to play. And I have to play in less than an hour.
So, Marco, you mentioned Paco de Lucia's hands. I remember a similar moment when we had Roberto Fonseca, the Cuban pianist, come into our studios. His hands were huge, and there was a whole, like, Q&A about how big his hands were, and just seeing them stretch out on the keyboard.
Incredible hands of Roberto Fonseca covering all those 81 keys of the piano. His tune there, Dime Que No, from his album Zamazoo.
You know, as we're going down memory lane, I'm also thinking of a few series that we've done for the program, Marco. Moments when we can expand on a topic or genre. And sometimes we get the whole team involved.
Yeah, we did the series on how some artists define the term world music. You know, April, when we went on the air in 1996... there were still record stores with these bins called world music, basically anything that wasn't from the United States or England. And so as time went on, we started thinking about this phrase and does it still work? Is it still applicable? Is it relevant? So we had people who had been in the world music scene about what world music meant to them. People like drummer Mickey Hart from the Grateful Dead and guitarist, songwriter, and blues woman Bonnie Raitt in 2017. Bonnie spoke with us about the impact Malian guitarist Ali Farka Touré had on her style.
Certainly my slide guitar playing and the way that I sing and the way that I hear things, that's one of my favorite sounds of music, the West African in particular, and South Africa, but West African for blues guitar. Those artists, especially Ali Farka, were the ones that really appealed to me. He was just the guy. He was the cat, you know, and he was so loquacious and generous and very enthusiastic about collaborating. So I was just knocked out by his playing.
Bonnie Raitt there recalling how Ali Farka Touré and his Malian guitar affected her own sound.
Yeah, that was a really fun series to do. And another series we did just last year celebrated hip-hop, where we focused on hip-hop and its impact around the globe. We called it Planet Hip-Hop, and that was a nod to the 50th anniversary of the genre.
Yeah, there were some really strong voices on there, like Messia Cabona-Clark of Howard University.
Yeah, correct. She mentioned so many fantastic female rappers around the globe, telling really interesting stories, writing songs about the challenges they face in what is still really a male-dominated genre. One of her favorites is Sampa the Great from Zambia. Sampa the Great is heard on the title track to the Netflix series Super Team 4. It's an animated series featuring female superheroes, girl strength, and these positive female role models.
Okay, okay, okay. Mama K. Yeah, yeah, you already know. 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's go. From LSK, you bet it, we don't play. My sister, my friends, gon' stay. And you know we got the power. Anything we dreamin' is ours. What's coming, what's running?
That is Sampa the Great. She's a rapper from Zambia in Southern Africa. You know, April, I started thinking back, and not to brag here, but it's really impressive how many people we've spoken with for the show. Are you ready for an abbreviated roll call?
Absolutely.
So there's Caetano Veloso, Gloria Estefan, Carlos Santana, Salif Keita, Zakir Hussain, Asha Bosley, I'm going to go on, Yusu Ndour, Miriam Makeba, Ruben Blades.
I'd also add to the list Elvis Costello, Ibrahim Ferrer, Peter Gabriel, Kate Bush.
And let's not forget Pete Seeger, Eddie Palmieri, as well as the brothers Femi and Seyun Kuti, sons of the legendary Fela Kuti. Younger brother Seyun I actually visited in Lagos, Nigeria, just after he released his debut album, Many Things, as leader of his father's band, the Egypt 80.
I don't hear many things. I don't see many things. I don't hear many things. I don't see many things. We make me think many things. We tell me pass anything. We make me think many things. We tell me pass anything. And that's time they go.
Seyun Kuti there. Great story of a son taking over the work of the father. April, what are the markers for you of what warrants getting an artist on the show? Like the music itself? The story behind the music?
It's a combination of both, really. You know, sometimes it's the music. Sometimes it's a fun global pop tune that we just want to introduce listeners to, that we're just really kind of grooving to at that moment. And sometimes it's a small chapter in their personal story that maybe we haven't heard before. For me, what's ideal is when we get that combination. It's a great story and great music.
One part of our work around music journalism here in the world has always been driven by discovery. And I know, April, that was definitely the case when you had the chance to meet a musician from Pakistan last year. Tell us about him.
Yeah, that's Ustad Noorbakhsh. He's 70 years old. He's been playing since he was 12 years old and comes from a family of musicians. He's from a region in Pakistan called Balochistan that shares a border with Iran and Afghanistan. This village has only 25 to 30 houses, and it's there that he plays an instrument called the Balochi banjo. Here he is describing what the banjo looks like. It's a custom-made instrument that looks like a zither and has strings, and the buttons almost look like typewriter buttons.
Oh, cool.
So when he presses a button, plucks a string, it has this really interesting twangy sound.
The sound is out there, but yet it sounds almost familiar, like country western, just like creeping up on the edges. How did Ustad Noorbakhsh, he's in his 70s, how did he finally achieve recognition beyond Pakistan?
Well, that's where Danial Ahmed comes in. When I spoke to Ustad Noorbakhsh, Danial was there too, helping to translate, and now he's the manager. Prior to that, he was an ethnomusicologist. So Danial told me how he came across this video of Ustad Noorbakhsh back in 2018. Mm. So that started Danial on this quest throughout Pakistan trying to find Ustad Noorbakhsh.
I went to look for him with a friend of mine. I just took my recording gear. So I was asking around, going back and forth in circles. And then what happened is I stopped at a small tea stall बता रहा हूँ कैसे मिला आपको ना. आई स्टॉप्ड एट अ स्मॉल टी स्टॉल एंड आई आस्क्ड हे वेयर इज उस्ताद नूरबख्श. आई हैव बीन लाइक गोइंग बैक एंड फोर्थ दीज पार्ट्स फॉर अ व्हाइल एंड ही वाज सिटिंग देयर ऑन द अदर साइड ऑफ द रोड बिकॉज़ हिज मोटरसाइकिल चेन हैड ब्रोकन एंड द गाय फ्रॉम द टी स्टॉल सेड ओह उस्ताद नूरबख्श देयर ही इज एंड देन दैट्स हाउ वी मेट.
I love it. His discovery, he passes on to us and we learn something new. Real serendipity here in this story, April. What did you hear from Ustad Nurbakhsh when you asked him about how he makes his songs?
Well, he composes his own music, and a lot of the music is inspired by birdsong. So he told me that he tries to replicate the sound of those birds on his instrument. So in addition to saying how he's inspired by these birds, he's also saying how the trees, the mountains, the streams, and just the surroundings in this small village really inspire the music.
Song is called Jungle by Ustad Nurbakhsh from Pakistan. April, you remember our show went on the air around the same time that the Buena Vista Social Club hit the scene in the mid-1990s. These veteran musicians from Havana who were essentially coaxed out of retirement by guitarist Ry Cooter and filmmaker Wim Wenders to make this movie and record an album. And since then, we featured practically every member of Buena Vista Social Club who went on to record solo albums, as well as the offspring of some of the players. We spoke with the daughters, I think you recall, of the percussionist Anga Diaz.
I certainly do. We spoke to them via Skype back in 2015. We couldn't see them, but they're twin sisters. And what was really funny was they kept finishing each other's sentences.
That's right. Lisa Kayinde and Naomi Diaz, together they make up the musical duo Ibeyi. And I want us to hear this interview again because not only are they charming, but you can start to hear how their music emerges.
Manasu ayo Omonia ala wana mama Kenya irawo
This is Lisa Kayinde.
This is Naomi.
Are you identical twins or just twins?
No, twins.
Okay. When we can't see you in person, what's the best way to know who is who?
We have a different voice.
Yes.
All right. Who just said the voice, I would say?
Lisa Kayinde.
Yeah. I said, Lisa Kayinde, you're kind of slightly higher in pitch, in octave, than Naomi.
Yes.
Naomi, you're a little deeper, huh?
Yes. Oh, now she said
Now
yes.
You're going high. Let me ask you, first of all, what does Ibeyi mean?
Ibeyi means twins in Yoruba.
You just did that in perfect harmony. So it means twins in Yoruba. So the culture of twins in West Africa's Yoruba tradition, that's in what is now Nigeria, it's very important, isn't it? I mean, I've heard stories about just how sacred twins are believed to be among the Yoruba. Is that all true?
Yes, it's true.
Twins are really important in the society. And actually, the mother of twins is really important, too.
So, you know, here's the weird thing. When I put on your CD for the first time, I was expecting something Afro-Cuban. I was not surprised to hear, music that's acoustic. But I was surprised to hear something that sounded like, you know, the mystery of the Bulgarian voices, Mystère des Voix Bulgares, kind of a polyphony.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. This is,
we love this.
Where does that come from, though? Because, you know, your parents are from Cuba. You lived in Paris. You've been immersed in this Yoruba Nigerian culture. Why does it sound so Eastern European?
I think it's because we have an obsession with voices.
Yes.
Just with voices. But, you know, this is, you can come from everywhere. It's really easy to have an obsession with voices. And when you listen to Yoruba music, it's all about rhythm and voices.
All right, this is getting kind of scary because at least three times in our interview so far, you have said the same thing in perfect harmony. So is that intentional, or do you always kind of finish each other's sentences?
It's always like that. It's always like that. Yeah.
Being alone is what I dread. No warm hands rain in my bed. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. Who will come and take this weight? Bathe me in light.
You know, not all siblings are able to work together, and twins usually have this identity struggle. You live as siblings, but you also need ways to kind of assert your individual identity so you don't look the same and don't act the same. How hard is it for you to work together?
It can be hard, but for me, it's the best person. It's Naomi who's speaking. For me, it's the best person who can I work with, because we can understand each other without speaking and just... It can be really hard, but at the same time, when we're on stage, it's just amazing.
Yeah, and I think we both know that our two worlds can really make better music. I'm always saying that I'm sure that if I'm doing music alone, it would never be as good and beautiful as me doing music with Naomi.
Oh, that's really sweet. So what about songwriting? How do you agree on what to write about? What usually triggers a song for both of you?
For the moment, I'm composing, and then Naomi came with the rhythms. And then the production part, Naomi knew where she wanted to go. And she said to our amazing producer, Richard Russell,
I said to Lisa and Richard Russell that I wanted this album to be just the two of us. And with... electronic sounds and hip-hop influences, because I'm listening a lot of hip-hop. So, and they agreed.
How many minutes apart are you as twins? I'm just curious.
2 minutes.
2 minutes.
2 minutes.
Yes.
So who came out first?
Naomi.
So, you know, you're the rhythm person, and Lisa Kayinde is the lyrics person. I don't know if the...
She's like the melody, I'm like the rhythm.
Okay. Well, Naomi and Lisa Kayinde Diaz, thanks very much for joining us. You perform as Ibei, and we hope to see you soon in the Boston area.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Welcome to my earth. It's a crying shame.
This is The World. I'm Marco Werman. Regina Spektor has always been a favorite in the indie rock scene. When she paid us a visit in 2012, she had just released album number 6, What We Saw from the Cheap Seats.
How can I forget your love? How can I never see you again? There is a time and place.
Spektor grew up in the Bronx, but she was born in Moscow and lived there while she was a girl until 1989. Up until arriving in the U.S., it was Russian singer-songwriters who influenced her music.
I didn't really grow up in Russia enough to be influenced by popular music. I don't even really know what the popular music there is or was. I was much more influenced by singer-songwriters and bards.
Like who?
Bulat Okudzhava. Two of his songs I actually covered in Russian for the digital deluxe version of my record. Mm. I also really, really love Vladimir Vysotsky, and he is definitely a national hero of, you know, a Soviet songwriter and an incredible actor and poet.
You mentioned this singer, Bulat Okudzhava, who mm-hmm. has composed so many songs that are adored, apparently, in Russia. Now, the song Prayer, I think that's a translation of the song he wrote. Let's have a listen to it. This is actually from a vinyl, so we'll take a taste of this.
Пока земля
еще вертится, пока еще ярок свет. Господи, дай это каждому, чего у него нет. Умному дай голову, трусливому дай коня, дай счастливому денег и не забудь про меня.
That's Regina Spektor performing a song by the Russian singer Bulat Akhujava. Explain to our American listeners, Regina Spektor, who Bulat Akhujava is and what he represents for Russians and you.
Well, he's an amazing poet. He was of the times of World War II. His songs are very melodic. Like, he writes these melodies that just sort of hurt, you know, and he was from the Georgian Republic. He's just a national hero.
And Regina, what lines of Bulat Akhujava do you often wheel out when you think of him?
Let me see. I mean, I definitely the two songs that I covered, you know, one is Malitva and the other one is Stary Pidjak, which means the old jacket. And
give us a few lines of that one.
Old jacket starts, Я старый пиджак давно ношу, совсем потерся и не нов он. It's a very heartbreaking song. It's about this man who he has this old suit jacket and he's worn it for a long time and it's threadbare and, you know, unfashionable. And so he takes it to a tailor to have it altered a bit. And he jokingly says to the tailor, you know, if you alter it just right, you know, maybe if it has a new cut, my luck will change in this world. And the old tailor, he took it really to heart, and he's worrying and he's struggling. And as he's sewing and re-sewing this jacket, he sees it almost as if it's reality. In his mind's eye, he sees that as soon as I put this jacket on, I will believe in your love again. But that's not how things work. What a silly old man.
Я много лет пиджак ношу давно. Потерся и не нов он, и я зову к себе портного и перешить пиджак прошу. Я говорю ему, шутя, перекроите все иначе, сулит мне новое.
When you sing in Russian, do you find that you express yourself differently? Is there an emotional side of you that is more easily accessed in Russian?
I think that, you know, I definitely feel like it's a different side of me, for sure. It's, you know, it's my first language. I spent the first 9 years of my life being a little Russian girl, you know, and then I moved to the Bronx and, you know, and then at 9 and a half, my life as a little American girl began. There are things, especially in the words of, you know, Akhujava and Pushkin, and when I read Russian literature, when I listen to songs of that time, I really love it. I love going into the world of, you know, opening a Russian book or reading poems by some of my favorite poets in Russian. It's just, it definitely feels just like a different part of me.
That's Regina Spektor speaking with us back in 2012. She visited our studio to talk about her newest album at the time. So, April, how about one more for the road? A short, sharp hit of music? Who's it going to be?
Well, we had Regina Spektor on once. One artist that immediately comes to mind is Angelique Kidjo. She's a longtime friend of the show. We've had her on numerous times.
Yeah, and not only is she an incredible performer, but Kidjo has been such a smart interpreter of the musical connections between Africa and North and South America, Brazil and the U.S. Best example I can think of, her cover of Voodoo Child by Jimi Hendrix, reminding us of the connections between her voodoo roots in native Benin and West Africa and that classic rock number.
Of my head, footprints via the floor.
Angélique Kidjo rounding out this Memorial Day special here on The World. April Peavy and I romping through our music archives and bringing you some bright moments. The World is a co-production of GBH Boston and PRX, broadcasting weekdays from the Nan and Bill Harris studio. You can find us online anytime at theworld.org. April, this has been a blast. Thanks for all your collaboration.
Thanks a lot, Marco.
I'm Marco Werman. We'll see you right back here tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your Memorial Day.
Before we say goodbye, I'm popping in to remind you that The World is fundraising now through June 14th. We'd appreciate it if you'd consider making a recurring gift today to keep our nonprofit newsroom running. You can head to theworld.org/give to donate and learn more. That is theworld.org/give. Thanks so much.
From PRX.